The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Good morning, everybody. Good to have you along. Thursday, May 21st. And we have a special guest here in the studio with us this morning, a Democrat candidate for Congress, Sam Forstag, is joining us. Sam, how are you?
Peter, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about Sam Forstag. A lot of folks may be unfamiliar with the name.
Yeah, well, I've been living here in Missoula working as a wildland firefighter and a smoke jumper.
Right.
Until about 6 months ago, I was vice president of my union's local, the National Federation of Federal Employees, when the Doge cuts and all the rest started. And they ended up firing about a quarter of the Forest Service in this state. A lot of those my members, and almost all of them the lowest paid people in the agency. 85% of the folks they fired 2 Valentine's Days ago making less than $20 an hour. And when I reached out to our representative Ryan Zinke over and over again, I got crickets. So I finally decided if he's going to come take my coworkers and union members' jobs, I'm going to come take his.
Well, that's very succinctly said. So obviously there's a fire burning in there somewhere.
Oh, a whole bunch of little fires. It doesn't seem like anybody's putting them out. They keep growing. I've grown up, I was raised largely by my mom. She's a nurse who had to pick up extra shifts to provide for my little sister. And my dad, frankly, while we were getting through, food stamps were what kept my belly full. And thank God, because he became a public school teacher. He's still teaching kindergarten today,
right.
Teacher Mick. And going to University of Montana here, I was working 2 to 3 jobs at a time the whole time, still came up short on rent or money for books sometimes. And that is an experience I think a lot of Montanans can relate to. It's not an experience a lot of people in Congress can relate to in a time when, the average congressperson is worth 15 times the average American. And the way I see it, if we want to build a country that works for working people, for people like us, we got to do it ourselves. It's just like when you're one of the first people on a fire after parachuting in, nobody else is coming. It is up to us.
So is this your first foray into politics, or is this a one and done thing, or just trying it out, or what?
Well, it's the highest office I've run for besides vice president of my local, but right. I've been doing organizing and policy work between fire seasons for most of the last decade. So between fire seasons, I fought for public education, public libraries. I worked for the ACLU briefly, put together a coalition of homeless shelters with the Poverello Center here in town.
Good for
you. Ended up having a dozen shelters and putting a platform together and getting legislation to pass about $5 million of state aid at the legislature during a Republican supermajority, working with people in both parties, because a lot of these things, like the notion that elderly folks shouldn't be living on the streets, they're not partisan issues, right? These are things that we can all agree on.
Let's talk a little bit about that bipartisanship. Is that something that you had to, that people were willing to do, or did you just kind of have to get in there?
Oh, it takes a lot of work, right?
Yeah.
Good things are the work of many hands. And no, walking into 2023, we did not have a, consensus or a majority of folks who were ready to pass the first ever state aid for homeless shelters. It took a lot of education. It took a lot of bringing folks across the state to tour their shelters and see, a third of the people here have jobs and they still can't afford a roof over their head. About a third of the people in our shelters in the state are dealing with mental health issues or substance use issues, and they don't have access to services. And what it boils down to is so many of these problems, whether it's housing and homelessness or even forest management, we are paying for in the most expensive, least effective way by waiting until it's a crisis. And a little bit of preventative medicine can go a long way to actually helping people.
And so when you say preventative, what kind of things can we do like right this very minute?
Well, at this moment, when it comes to something like housing,
right.
We can invest upfront in the programs we used to invest in as a country. We got programs like the Community Development Block Grant, with which we used federal dollars to build affordable housing that people can get into and afford the rents on the back end. And we have not increased investments in those programs in decades. And what I would offer is, if the federal government's going to step in, if they're going to provide some sort of subsidy and aid, we should have requirements as well to make sure that we're getting rid of regulations that prevent the building of housing where people need it. In the city centers where it's most environmentally safe, where people need it if they're working in town and don't have to travel.
Sam Forstag is joining us here in the studio this morning. He'll be here till 9 o'clock. And taking your phone calls, we have some folks calling in. Our number, 1-800-568-5309 or 406-721-1290. We're coming right back with more with Sam Forstag here in the studio right after this on TalkBack.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Back to sun on Thursday, at least west of the Divide, and it looks like we're starting a real nice stretch of weather that should last through Memorial Day. Highs finally returning to the mid-60s, and then the low to mid-70s Friday as high pressure settles in. We could see a few clouds Thursday night and a mix of sun and cloud at times through the weekend, but I think you're going to love these temperatures. Close to 80 Saturday, then low to mid-80s for Sunday into Monday with overnight lows in the upper 40s. Another disturbance means you should keep the rain gear handy, though, later on Monday.
In the U.S., a vehicle is stolen every 31 seconds. Protect your car. Remove valuables. Roll up your windows. Lock your doors and take your keys. Report crime to the police. And if it's insurance fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
All right, welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. I'm Peter Christian, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls. Sam Forstag is joining us here in the studio this morning, a Democratic candidate for Congress, and Harry is waiting on the line. Harry, good morning, sir. You're on with Sam. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, Sam. First off, I agree with you that there was an old commercial that says you can pay me now or pay me later. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, a good thought about. But I'm curious, what differentiates you from the other Democrats that are running? And also, one more question. Social Security is going to be, you know, coming up against the wall here pretty soon. And the Republicans never seem to have a fix. They just keep saying, fraud and waste, which doesn't fix it. But then they say, well, we'll look at it. And that's all they ever hear from us. So what do you have any plans to try to fix the Social Security?
Harry, thank you for asking the questions. I mean, from the top, that's a hell of an ad. I'm going to have to look it up. It says it in scripture too, right? I promise you will pay every penny before you leave this place. And we're paying every penny. We're just paying a whole lot more on the back end because we disinvest up front. What differentiates me? Well, I was telling Peter before the show started, we have four folks running in this primary and they're all great people. And that's a good problem that you got so many talented people running around the state, getting people excited about voting and engaging with politics. That is not what it has felt like in recent years. What makes me unique are three things. It is lived experience, legislative experience, and it's my union background that's helping to build the broad coalition we got here. I mean, first off, it's what I mentioned up front. You know, I know what it's like to be a kid whose belly's full because of food stamps, to be working three jobs at a time here in Missoula and still coming up short, and to finish a shift at 1 a.m. and still have a paper to write, not enough money for rent, and think this ain't how it's supposed to work. And that is not how it is supposed to work.
And Missoula is an extraordinarily expensive place to live.
And it's not any better since I was in college.
Yeah.
Right? It's gotten harder, and it's the same in Gallatin County and Flathead County. This is people's experience across the state because, well, things are getting expensive and wages ain't keeping up. If there's an experience that we direly are lacking in the halls of Congress, I would offer it is that. Right? The average congressperson is worth about $4 million, depending on the day and how good the stock market's doing. The average Montana is making $60,000 a year, and that experience gap, I would offer, lends itself to the lack of urgency with addressing the material concerns that a lot of Montanans are facing on a day-to-day basis. And the second thing that sets me apart in this field is my legislative experience. I mentioned I've been doing organizing and advocacy work for about a decade in this state, managed to get about a dozen bills passed into law, working with people in both parties, talking past our differences on everything from housing and homelessness to public libraries or criminal justice. That's what it's going to take to get us out of this hole that our national leaders have dug for us, right? It's figuring out how to talk past our differences and find common ground.
Let's talk about that because we hear that all the time. We need to work together. And then you get into Congress or into whatever political organization it is. And then the sides, they choose sides and it's a battle all the way.
Yeah.
So how are you able to keep the principles that you have inside,
mm-hmm.
you know, and keep them sacrosanct and yet be able to reach out and say, okay, you and I are diametrically opposed to this. How can we get together?
I'll tell you, when we win this seat, and I intend to win this seat, that is going to be a position of incredible leverage if we play it correctly. Because we got a representative right now who calls himself a Roosevelt Republican. And I've read a whole lot of Teddy Roosevelt biographies. You know what Teddy did when he got to Albany in his first legislative body? He put himself right in the middle. Because that is the most powerful place that you can be in a legislative body. That's not what we've had lately. And that is what we deserve in a seat like this, is somebody who's willing to buck both parties. And somebody who's willing to say that, well, quite frankly, what I believe is that the structures and the problems with the Democratic Party are just about as much of what got us here as the ones with the National Republican Party. It's people who are refusing to talk across differences and are more happy to scream into their cell phone screens about everything that is wrong with the world than they are to actually move the ball down the field. And, you know, the way I saw that here in Montana is we actually got to get a budget passed every year at the Montana legislature. It's in the Constitution.
Right.
And I wasn't always happy with the way those things went. But I was willing to sit down like I did 2 weeks ago with a Republican legislator in the Bitterroot and say, we don't have to agree on everything. That is never how politics was supposed to work. If we want to get something done, we just got to agree on these core notions that you should be able to work one good job and afford a roof over your head and health coverage that actually gets you health care when you need it. And you know what? Child care, so you don't get run out of town if you want to raise a couple kids like I do, but you don't have enough money.
Let's get, we have Skip on the line. Skip, good morning. You're on with Sam Forstag. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Peter, and good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
I saw you once. I went up just to listen to the debate and forum that was up at the barn in outside of Stevensville.
Oh yeah,
and I saw you there. And when I listen to commercials on TV, I like to understand the lines that you used in one of your commercials, the one that comes on most often, usually during the news broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines you used was something about the richest people in the country mm-hmm. building it up so they could burn it down, or some line like that. So I thought, if I ever heard you on the radio, I was going to ask you, would you please explain what that means? My guess is you know what that line is.
Well, he's a firefighter. So,
yes, sir.
No, that's not what about. That's not what it was about. I was wondering what's the real purpose behind that? Would you explain the depth of that statement that you make in your commercial about building it up to burn it down or something like that? Appreciate knowing about that.
Absolutely.
Thank
you
a lot.
Thanks,
yeah.
Skip.
Skip, it's good to see you. I don't know if we got to meet in Stevensville, but it's good to meet you over the radio. What I'm saying, this commercial in the frustratingly compressed timeline of 30 seconds I will offer is that right now the richest people in this country are trying to burn it all down so they can buy it all up. And what I'm talking about when I talk about that is things like what the last caller called in about, our Social Security system that is set to have benefits diminish in 6 or 7 years because, well, the top 6 or 7% of people in this country don't pay the same share of their income into payroll taxes as the rest of us, because after $184,000 a year, you don't pay another dollar into Social Security.
Wow.
And that's no way to run a country. And that is no way for everybody in this country to carry their own weight, just like the rest of us are doing right now. And when what we have lived through over the last year and a half is a whole lot of the public services that working people depend on being gutted and cut. It's our public lands agencies being cut to the tune of, what, a quarter of our staffing in this state. Their plan for the Forest Service is to cut it down to 1/3 of the staffing levels that it was at a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And again, what they are doing when they do that is the same thing they have done with public education in this state, in this country, with our mental health services in this state that get cut so deep that a lot of the folks who deserve that compassionate service end up at homeless shelters because they don't have access to anything else. What they're doing is they're burning down the services that so much of us depend on so that they can squeeze us all for a little bit more profit.
We're gonna come right back, and Sam is going to be with us all the way till 9 o'clock this morning. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free to give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're going to come right back after this timeout.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
We are back. This is Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen producing Talk Back, taking your phone calls. Our guest here in the studio, Sam Forstag, Democratic candidate for Congress, and folks have lined up to talk with Sam. So, Emmett, you're up first. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I like what you're saying. You know, you seem to have, you know, I guess for the most part, some pretty good ideas about how to fix our country and solve various problems. But I heard something on Fox News, and I heard the actual video of Hakeem Jeffries that was extremely disturbing, and he seemed to be speaking for the Democrat Party, that Hakeem Jeffries said, we should just break the spirit of MAGA. We need to break their spirit. To me, that was repulsive. Is that what the Democrat Party stands now for? Was he speaking for the Democrat Party? Just break MAGA? That seemed to put the Democrat Party at war with the American people. I found that horrifying. I came in a little bit late. Are you running for Congress or Senate? And if you are, how would you stand against a very powerful Democrat machine that seems to think this way now? I mean, it's commendable you're running, but boy, that's very disturbing. If you could... If you could describe that,
Emmett, thanks for the call.
Emmett, I will tell you, you missed just the beginning. I'm running for Congress in the Western District.
Right.
Voting is June 2nd. And what I said just about 15 minutes ago is what I've been saying across the western part of the state, that I am just a hair less frustrated with the National Democratic Party than I am with the National Republican Party, because it takes two to tango. And they both got us into this mess. And the way that we get out of this thing, that we get out of this hole, is not tearing each other down on the way up or trying to tell people that they were wrong last time around for who they voted for. It's by finally having some affirmative vision for what we can do together to start fixing a housing crisis or a broken system of health care and child care or a retirement system where, well, 6 or 7% of the country ain't carrying their own weight like the rest of us, like we were talking about earlier. And so, you know, as I'm going across the state, occasionally I'll get a question like that, Emmett. People asking, well, your friends, your union members, folks who voted for the people in power right now, do they see that they were wrong? And I would offer that that is not the right way to be approaching this, because at the end of 2024, I was making $19 an hour jumping out of airplanes for the United States Forest Service. I was 7 years in. There's folks who are 20 plus years in making that same wage, risking their life for the federal government in a place where you can't find a house for less than $500,000. And if that is the case, then your life has not materially improved over the preceding 4 years. And that is a failure of leadership. And you should not have to be following politics and the intricacies of policymaking to know why that happened.
And Bozeman is just as bad. They've got law enforcement officers living 20 miles out of town because they can't afford a place in town.
Yeah, I got folks having to bump out to Belgrade or Manhattan because you can't afford to live in town. That is a failure of leadership. And it is a failure of our leaders to make the hard political decisions and policy decisions it takes to fix a housing system, because what has led us here are policy decisions. What has led us here are the lack of policy decisions around making sure you can build houses where you need them, and around making sure that we are investing our resources in the places that people, working people, desperately need right now, instead of investing them in tax cuts for the richest people in this country. Okay. That's what I'm running on.
Let's get Rick on. Rick, good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on with Sam Forstag. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mr. Forstag. I see your commercials, and Bernie Sanders is giving you an attaboy. Mm-hmm. He's supporting you. How can you trust your party? I'm an ex timber worker. I'm very conservative. Mm-hmm. But how can you trust your party to not abuse you like they do Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders is a fantastic foot soldier for the Democratic Party, but when it comes to any real leadership past what he's doing right now. They pull the rug out from under him. They do it in the primaries. They pull really crappy tricks on that man. I don't want to see the man ever be president of the United States personally, but I admire his steadfastness, loyalty to the Democratic Party after all they have done to him to keep a very short chain on him and use him when they want him, but kick him away when they don't want him. All You're right. kind of in the same mold of Bernie Sanders. How can you say that they'll not do the same to you?
All right, thanks for the call.
Rick, I'll tell you, I trust the Democratic Party about as far as I can throw them. And we got to throw some people. And I, this past year and a half, I mean, with everything we were just talking about, Rick, people's lives were not improving materially. And they're not improving after 4 years of the Democratic Party being in control at the national level. That's beyond frustrating. That's unacceptable. And when I hear a lot of young people, a lot of people my age, tell me something like, well, you know, both parties are just the same. Maybe you've heard that too. Well, that on one hand, that is an incredibly frustrating thing to hear. After a year and a half of watching a lot of my union members, a lot of public services that we depend on be absolutely gutted so that we can waste our money in wars overseas that nobody asked for. But on the other hand, well, you look at the people who are actually representing us in Congress, the average wealth of a congressperson is $4 million. It ain't any lower for the Democrats there than it is for the Republicans. You look at the people in Congress, well, the average age of a congressperson is 58 or 56 years old. You know what the older of those two parties is? It is the Democratic Party. I would offer that the doors of change have been closed for far too long, not just in Congress, in the Democratic Party itself. And it's high time we kicked them open, because people's lives are not improving, and that is what government is here for. It's to improve your life materially when the market ain't meeting a need. And right now there's a whole lot of basic needs the market ain't meeting.
We're going to come right back. Our phone lines are open, by the way. Sam's going to be with us till 9 o'clock this morning, and we have Sherry and Nancy both standing by to visit with him. Several other phone lines open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. You're joining us here on Talk Back. Sam Forster. He's a Democratic candidate for Congress, one of many. And we haven't talked about AOC coming to town to talk about you. And we'll do that when we come back from the break. Our number is 721-1290. We'll be right back.
Hey, Boo.
With KGRZ Sports, here's your sports update. Brought to you by Campbell Kia of Missoula. New and pre-owned vehicles at a no-pressure buying experience. Located off Expressway and online at CampbellKia.com. Here's Ace Sauerwein.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, they even up the Western Conference Finals as they defeat San Antonio last night, 122-113. The league's MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he had 30 points. En route to the victory, Victor Wembanyama, another nice night, 21 points, 17 rebounds, 6 assists. But it wasn't enough. The Thunder and Spurs are now even at a game apiece. Cleveland versus New York, game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals coming up tonight, 6 o'clock from Madison Square Garden. That game will be on ESPN. National Hockey League scoreboard update. Last night, it was the Vegas Golden Knights getting out to a 1-0 lead as they defeat the Avalanche 4-2 in the Western Conference Final. The Avalanche were without Cale Makar. Hurricanes Canadians tonight, 6 o'clock on TNT. That's a look at sports. I'm Ace Sauerwein.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Back to sun on Thursday, at least west of the divide. And it looks like we're starting a real nice stretch of weather that should last through Memorial Day. Highs finally returning to the mid-60s and then the low to mid-70s Friday as high pressure settles in. We could see a few clouds Thursday night and a mix of sun and cloud at times through the weekend. But I think you're going to love these temperatures. Close to 80 Saturday, then low to mid-80s for Sunday into Monday with overnight lows in the upper 40s. Another disturbance means you should keep the rain gear handy, though, later on Monday.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries. Leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Small businesses are the heart of America. Like you, these entrepreneurs started out with a dream and a drive to build a better life. If you have a small business idea to grow or challenge to face, you don't have to go it alone. Since 1964, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. Today, they are the nation's largest nonprofit source of expert mentoring, resources, and education. Whether you're starting out, building back, or have worked at it for years, SCORE will match you with specialized mentors. Our thousands of volunteers provide the guidance and connections you need for free. Your success is waiting. SCORE is ready to help. Find a mentor today at score.org.
We are back on TalkBack. 406-721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning, and we have Sam Forstag joining us here in the studio, Democratic candidate for Congress. And before we take another call, I wanted to ask you, but you have a special, very special person coming to promote you here in Missoula at the Wilma. What's going on?
Help is coming, and that is what we've needed for a while. We, next Thursday, on the 28th at the Wilma, at 4 o'clock, everybody come. We've got Representative Ocasio-Cortez coming to help stump for the campaign, and not just her. We have Sarah Nelson, the head of the National Flight Attendants Union, who is an incredible speaker, and we're going to have union leaders from across the state joining us as well. It's going to be everyone from AOC and Sarah Nelson to folks from the Boilermakers and SEIU, the home care workers that make this place work, talking about the fact that it's beyond time that we had some more work and representation in Congress. And that is something that, well, AOC had to do when she ran. She ran in a competitive primary. She ousted an incumbent, and she came from being a waitress and having to scrap to make a living.
And a bartender.
We do not right. have enough folks providing that perspective in Congress right now. And I remember when they came about a little over a year ago, like we were talking, Peter, at the peak of the Doge cuts, when I had members who were losing their job 15 years into their civil service in the middle of chemotherapy treatments just because they happened to take a lateral transfer, and it did not seem like there was any help coming from Congressman Zinke. Well, they came, they made sure that working people and that people in public lands agencies had a mic so we could fight for ourselves, and I appreciate the hell out of them coming to help us win this thing.
All right, let's get right back to the phone. Say good morning to Sherry. Sherry, good morning. You're on with Sam Forstag. Go ahead, please.
Well, good morning. Thanks for making yourself available for questions.
Hi, Sherry.
I was just curious, hi, how you felt about the Muslim community in America and Sharia law in America, considering what's happening in Europe right now?
Well, Sherry, thanks for calling in. I tell you broadly, my feeling is that diversity is our strength in this country, and this country has always been a haven for folks of all faiths and all backgrounds to come and freely practice.
It's a melting pot.
Yeah, it's a melting pot. That is what makes us so strong. And I'll tell you, I was in Butte just about a month ago. We were taking a historical tour, and one of the most powerful stories I heard is about the fact that, well, you know, my middle name's Kelly. I come from an Irish family. Above ground, you know, you had the Irish, you had the Scots, you had the English. They all hated each other. And when you got below ground, it didn't matter where you were from or what your ethnicity was, because you were dependent on that guy beside you to make sure that you made it out and that you made it out alive. And the work is what brought people together. And that's what it feels like on the fire line. And God, it feels like that's what we need in this country when it comes to our politics, is not, you know, categorizing people based on where they come from or what their faith is, but saying we actually agree on so many things, and we can start with those things that we agree on, with the basic needs that people deserve to be able to work a good job and meet, and that are falling far too far out of reach for so many working people in this state.
Let's get another call. This is Nancy. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Sam Forstag. Go ahead.
Good morning, Sam, and good morning, Montana. Sam, you kind of lost me here. You come across as an old hickory Andrew Jackson Democrat, but yet you're complimenting a woman like AOC, who is a she admitted she's a communist socialist. She wants to twist and turn this country all the way around. She wants socialism. She doesn't like our government. She hates it. And I am amazed that you would even mention her as a soulmate in politics. there's just no way. I've just lost interest in you over this fact, and I don't even have any questions to ask you now. I mean, if you're going to go along with AOC, you can forget me and everybody else for a vote.
Thanks for the call.
Well, Nancy, genuinely, thank you for calling, because all feedback is good feedback here. And I'll tell you, the core part of this campaign that we mentioned up top is my belief that we can fight for big policy change and still be willing to sit at the table and work with people who we do not agree with on every single thing. That is the only way democracy functions. That's the only way we get legislation passed. And right now, they're not getting anything passed. We have the least productive Congress in history by the number of bills passed right now. And, well, I'll tell you, it's not just AOC or Bernie Sanders supporting this campaign. It's over 30 Montana legislators, including four Republicans. Because that is the kind of coalition we need to win this thing. And it's also the kind of coalition we're going to need to actually deliver on change for people. You know, we're doing a series of civil discourse conversations in the course of this campaign. That ain't, you know, especially helpful in a primary necessarily, but it's core to my belief that this is how we get out of the hole here, is I'm sitting down with Republicans across this state, current former legislators, and we're talking about the fact that we might not agree on everything, but we can agree on Medicaid expansion. We can agree on the fact that it is not the best way to address homelessness, to disinvest from all of our services, so that, well, we end up with elderly folks and mentally ill folks getting tied up in the carceral system, ending up in the state prison, ending up in the state hospital, and then you know what happens on the back end? They get discharged and dropped off behind the dumpster at the Butte Rescue Mission. That is the most uncompassionate, non-cost-effective way we can deal with these problems, and this is common ground regardless of whether it's AOC or a Republican legislator in this state that we can come together around fixing.
We're going to come right back, and we've got we have Melissa from Hamilton and Justin both waiting to visit with Sam Forstag, our guest here in the studio this morning, Democratic candidate for Congress.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community, at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Oh, that's got to be the theme for every politician who's jumping in for the first time. Don't stop believing, right?
I ain't going to stop. Yeah, that's all we got.
Sam Forstag's joining us here in the studio this morning, Democratic candidate for Congress. And Melissa has been waiting from Hamilton. Melissa, good morning, and thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks. Hey, Sam.
Hi,
I've got a question. I hear you talk a lot about public lands and the importance of public lands, and that can mean different things to different people. And I just want to know, like, what that means for you and how you intend to support public lands.
Yeah, I mean, I love our public lands. It's core to why I'm running, right? I spent the last 8 years fighting fire and jumping out of airplanes into them, and it was the best job I ever had, even if it didn't always pay the way it ought to. And for me, public lands have meant that even when I was working three jobs at a time while going to classes here, I could squeeze in a Sunday afternoon and drive 30 minutes up the valley, be at a trailhead, and 30 minutes later be on top of a ridge. That is the most beautiful thing that we got in this state, because everybody has access to it. Doesn't matter if you got a ranch or your own property, you can go hunting and you can bag something, because it belongs to all of us. And our public lands are not just lines on a map. That is what I keep telling folks. Our public lands are a whole lot of people working their tails off to make sure you can make it up a road to a trailhead or up a trailhead to actually access the forest. It's a whole lot of people conducting the science that it takes to make sure we can responsibly manage those lands, responsibly harvest timber when it's appropriate, doing the science to make sure that our air and water is clean. And when we cut those jobs, when we turn those people's lives upside down, all of our access to those lands suffers. So what I will be fighting for is that any appropriations package we pass should have a fully funded public lands agency, because even when they were fully funded, we still had problems and we were still falling behind. when it comes to the fuels backlog, for instance, on our forests. And what I'll fight for is changes like the fact that corner crossing should not be illegal, because if it's public land, it should be accessible to everybody in the public. And stepping over an infinitesimally small piece of space on a map should not be a federal crime, and it should not take costly litigation in court to get there. I think one of the benefits of this seat, it's not just going to be the policies we can pass, it's going to be the platform it's going to give us to hold other public officials accountable when they try to restrict our access to public lands like we are seeing right now in this state.
All right, Melissa, thanks for the call. Justin is standing by. Justin, go ahead. You're on with Sam Forstag. Go ahead,
yes,
please.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. Pardon me if I happen to ask a question that's already been answered. I just turned the radio on here a little bit ago. But can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Sam, you did say, I've got a couple questions. So something that kind of struck me odd is, so you're running for the Democratic Party. But
yes,
you,
sir,
about 10, 15 minutes ago, you said that you don't trust the Democrats as far as you can throw them. So why would you even want to be affiliated with that party? And then my other question is the nonsense of the transgender, children, with the, sex changes, men and women sports, all that nonsense where, any normal rash thinking person knows there's only two genders, male and female. How do you feel about that nonsense? It seems like they're trying to ram it down our throat. What's your viewpoint on that?
Thank you for the call.
Yeah, Justin, I'll take one, then the other. I mean, on the first count, like I said, I'm only slightly less frustrated with the National Democratic Party than the Republican Party, and I would offer that the party infrastructure at the national level broadly is broken. And it is broken in the sense that it does not serve our interests as working people in this state and in this country. It's broken in the sense that we have had folks sitting in some of these seats for 20, 30 plus years who it is beyond time that we get a new generation of leadership into. And it's broken in the sense that, well, actually, it works in the way that a lot of the people in power have intended it to work. It works to make sure that a very, very small slice of this country can get incredibly rich off of an incredible amount of chaos that they're wreaking right now in all of our lives. And we don't fix that by just complaining or screaming into our cell phone screens. We fix that by standing up and doing the work to fix it ourselves. When I left Smoke Jumping, I was leaving the best job I ever had. And I did not do that because I was in a position of, well, incredible financial stability by any means.
Ready to retire now.
I did that because it didn't seem like anybody else was doing the darn work in the way that we needed it. It did not seem like anybody was standing up for a lot of people that I know, people like me, whose lives were not improving on a material basis and who deserve a government that's actually going to work for us and not work for large corporations or be investing in tax cuts for the richest people in this country when we have record numbers of people living on the streets across Western Montana. And that leads right into the second part of your question. I would offer that if government is not improving our lives materially, it might just be outside of its lane. And on the topics that you just talked about, it reminds me of when I was a kid watching the hearings about steroid use in baseball. And I remember asking my dad, what does this have to do with Congress? Yeah. Why is Congress spending their time on this? And I've had that same thought. What it has to do with Congress or with legislative bodies is what I see when I go to the Montana legislature working for public libraries or homeless shelters. What I see is that a lot of them spending about two-thirds of their time talking about these issues while they don't want us looking at the fact that they just cut the top income tax bracket 6 years in a row. Talking about these issues while they don't want us looking at the fact that in 2017 they gutted the state's mental health system. And then over the following 6 years, when they had budget surpluses, did they reinvest in it? No, they cut income taxes for the wealthiest folks in this country year after year. And you don't got to look up and wonder why our property taxes are so darn high. It's because what is happening in this country is you have the people in power singing and dancing, talking about one issue, so we don't look the other way while they pick all of our pockets. And though the issues that we need to be talking about are the things making our lives more materially difficult, because if you can't fill your belly, well, it's a whole lot harder to extend the kind of compassion and empathy that our neighbors deserve in this country and that there seems to be a glaring lack of in a place where everybody should be able to live a life with dignity, regardless of who they are.
We have about a, we're up against a break. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. Our guest here in the studio, in case you just joined us, Sam Forstag is a Democratic candidate for Congress. And there, by the way, there is a rally coming up on the 28th at the Wilma with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's going to be appearing for you and bringing some other friends with her, right?
A whole lot of union leaders from across the state. We're going to have folks from across the spectrum, across the state, coming to support this campaign for Congress. Vote June 2nd.
Sounds good. All right. Again, we have Dave, we have Lori, we have Elliot, and Arnold, all waiting to visit with you in the last 8 minutes of the show. So
we'll talk quick.
We will do the best we can to get all those folks on. And when we come back from the break, our number, area code 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, in case you just joined us, you're on TalkBack on the Montana Talks Radio Network. So we'll continue with our visit with Sam Forstag, Democratic candidate for Congress, when we return right after this quick timeout.
In a world of complications.
We are back. This is Talk Back. And in the final few minutes of our time together with Sam Forstag, and Dave is up next. Dave, quickly, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. You know, as an independent voter, I voted both R's and D's. And I admire your desire to work with both sides, but I'm also a cynic. When we have a president who, in an interview in October 24, said that Democrats are the enemies within and argue that they are more dangerous than Russia and China. So I think, I mean, if that's the attitude of our president, I'm not sure you can compromise or even work with them if they, you know, if you are the enemy within.
Dave, I'll tell you, statements like, statements like that, strike me as absolutely shameful. Our president is supposed to be the foremost public servant in this country, and there seems to be a hell of a dearth of public service from the people who are leading us at the national level. And, well, I remember reading somewhere that, you know, back in the day in this country, all the enemies were outside the gates, and the enemies are not our neighbors. That is what this campaign is about. It is about the fact that we can find common ground. It's about the fact that there are big policy changes that we need, but we don't have another 2 years to wait when we win this seat, and we are going to win this seat. And I'd offer that when we do that, well, we will have Democratic control, say, of the United States House, maybe of the Senate. We'll find out. And there's going to be a Republican in the White House, whoever that is. And a lot of working people, a lot of people like me or my neighbors, do not have another 2 years to wait to actually achieve some policy solutions on things like housing and childcare, to actually achieve some policy solutions on something like healthcare when 5 million people just lost their coverage. The point is not whether or not I find a statement or two to be despicable. The point is that we don't have time, and we actually got to move the ball down the field. And when I listen to a State of the Union that's 95% hot air, and then he mentions, well, we ought to ban corporate home ownership, if I was in that chamber, I'd stand up and I'd say, heck yeah, because that is the place that we can work together, and we don't have time to just sit around and scream into our cell phone screens. We've been doing that, and it ain't working.
Let's get another call in before we run out of time. Lori, go ahead. You're on with Sam Forstag.
Thank you. Good morning, Sam. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I wanted to address a statement you made that you think the role of the government is to make our lives more financially stable. I would urge you to reread your Constitution and Declaration of Independence and see that the role of the government, the primary role of government, is to keep us safe from enemies, foreign and domestic, and to make our lives easier in that it's easier for us to make our lives more financially stable, not the role of the government.
That is the second, but you're absolutely right on that second count, right? What is the Bill of Rights? It is a series of protections that we have from our government. And right now, when it comes to a whole lot of these issues, what I see is the government inserting themselves into parts of our lives that they've got no business in. When it comes to a private medical decision between a family and their doctor, well, that is just that. It's a private decision, and our congressperson's got no place in that unless they're part of that family. And on the second count, Lori, on a day-to-day basis, some of these issues when it comes to us as working people being up against massive amounts of power and money, you know, corporations that are hurtling towards a future where they've got more control than, well, all of us, the federal government and us pulling together to put our backs into it is the best chance that we've got to make sure that we still have a voice in the future of this country and of our families' lives.
The final 2 minutes are yours. Why should we vote for Sam Forstag?
Well, I told you up front, right? We have a whole lot of good folks running in this primary. It's on June 2nd. What makes me unique here is it's my lived experience. It is the fact that I know what it's like to be on the wrong side of a broken system of housing, the wrong side of a broken system of healthcare or childcare. I'm going to fight hard as heck to fix it. And we're on radio, so I want to make sure I use the right language. It is the fact that I'm the only person in this field who's actually been doing the work on the ground to pass policies into law here in Montana, working with groups like the ACLU to fight for constitutional freedoms, like the Public Library Association, to make sure that we still have access to public goods like that, groups to actually pass reforms on criminal justice to make sure that kids who end up in juvie over in Miles City are not graduating with debt that makes them a whole lot more likely to recommit. Those are the places where we can still find common ground. That is what I intend to do as your next congressperson. And the last part is we live in Montana. We've got some of the richest union history in the country. We've got Butte America, the Gibraltar of unionism, and we have not had a union member as a major party nominee for Congress or Senate in over a decade. That's a shame. And that ends here.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I'll tell you why it is. It's because right now we got a broken system of campaign finance, and it takes a whole lot of resources to run for federal office. And a lot of union members are working people. And that means that we were not raised in networks of wealthy individuals. And if you're not already wealthy or raised in networks of wealthy folks, it is that much harder to raise that kind of money. And the only way that we fix that system is we punch right through it and we get a working person and a union member in a Congress that we can fight for ourselves and change this thing.
How can people support you? What mail address, whatever?
Thank you for asking. I should have brought it up. It's samformontana.com, all spelled out. And please go sign up top to volunteer. Read about the policy platform. It is as detailed as it could possibly be, I promise. And make sure that you're registered to vote. You can register up until Election Day, whatever Christy Jacobson tries to do, and you can vote on June 2nd. We can fix this thing. We are the change that we've been waiting for, and I would love your vote.
Sam, you've been a delight. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking all the questions and answering them. We appreciate that.
Let's do it again, sir.
Oh, you bet. And we're going to take a quick break at the top of the hour, and we're going to shift gears, and we're going to be talking with Bob Seidenschwartz, who will be with us in the Montana World Affairs Council, and Tiff Roberts, our expert on China, is going to be joining us here in the studio. It's going to be a great hour talking about what's happening between the U.S. and China. So hope you'll stay with us. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout. Again, our phone number is 406-721-1290.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Well, good morning once again, everyone, and we are shifting gears after a great hour with Sam Forstag last hour. We have Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio this morning. Bob, of course, the Montana World Affairs Council representative, and we have a great guest and one of our favorites here on the show, Tiff Roberts, is going to be joining us. And so, Bob, please, the floor is yours.
Yeah, we have a precious hour with Tiff, so I think it's important because we have a lot of people now listening to the show from across the state.
Right.
Some who may be familiar with Tiff, of course, our folks here in Western Montana are, but we just recently had a very important event in terms of the president going to China. So this is our opportunity to get some insight from one of the country's leading experts on China. And Tiff, I'm going to ask you, for the benefit of our now statewide audience, please give a little bit of background on yourself and your time in China so that we establish a little bit of your street cred here.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob. Yeah, no, I'm delighted to be back on the show, guys, Peter and Nick. And also, great that now you guys, that we're broadcasting across the great state of Montana. So my background on me, I'm a Montanan, grew up here in Missoula, Montana. But then spent about a quarter quarter century in China as a business journalist for Business Week magazine, if the listeners remember that magazine, and then for Bloomberg Business News, and was there for China entering the World Trade Organization back in the old days when there wasn't a lot of business there, and covered the whole thing right up until about 6-7 years ago when I came back here. I'm teaching at the University of Montana, U.S.-China relations and Chinese politics. And then the last thing, or one of the last things that keeps me busy is I do a China newsletter and podcast, comes out every Sunday, called Trade War, which is on the Chinese economy and U.S.-China relations. So I also wear a hat as a research fellow for a think tank in D.C. called the Atlantic Council for the China, the Global China Hub there. So that's me, and great to be back on the show.
Yeah, and just, Tiff, I want to add, too, that for our listeners, you are fluent in the language, which means that you still have contacts and the ability to reach deeper into China than really the vast majority of us would ever have access to those type of relationships. So the insights and what you will share with us today is unique and an opportunity for, of course, our callers to be able to really ask the tough questions. So I'm going to just start out the conversation, and then I understand we're going to have to go to a break. The president makes an incredibly important trip by actually going to China in the first place. And the last time a president went to China was Donald Trump, I believe, during his first administration. So, Tiff, time-wise, Peter?
We've got exactly a minute.
Okay, so let's start the conversation out with the importance of that actual trip that he makes to China.
Yeah, no, real quickly, that's very important. The last trip, as you said, was Trump during his first term. It was almost a decade ago in 2017. And, you know, the two sides, whether they like each other or not, need to keep talking. We have an extremely important bilateral trade and investment relationship. So I'm, for one, am very glad that the president went to China now. One last point. I think the other longest period when there were no visits by U.S. presidents to China was right after the Tiananmen Square massacre, which was back in 1989. That was a real low point in U.S.-China relations. This latest visit hopefully will keep us from clashing too directly in the near future.
We're going to come right back, and the phone lines are open at 406-721-1290. Our guest, Bob Seidenschwartz and Tiff Roberts. We'll talk more when we return right after this.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Back to sun on Thursday, at least west of the divide, and it looks like we're starting a real nice stretch of weather that should last through Memorial Day. Highs finally returning to the mid-60s, and then the low to mid-70s Friday as high pressure settles in. We could see a few clouds Thursday night and a mix of sun and cloud at times through the weekend, but I think you're going to love these temperatures. Close to 80 Saturday, then low to mid-80s for Sunday into Monday with overnight lows in the upper 40s. Another disturbance means you should keep the rain gear handy, though, later on Monday.
Welcome back. This is Talk Back for Thursday, May 21st. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls this morning. And we have Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio. So, Bob, please, it's all yours.
Yeah, Tiff, there, of course, anytime you make a visit of this magnitude, after the visit, there's the pundits who are going to be looking at this, and they're going to be saying, well, look, he didn't get this, or they got this, they got some trade deals, but we didn't get this, so was a visit worth it? And there's so much dynamics that are in place here in terms of where currently China stands as they view themselves and also viewed by the world, and how does that then contrast with how the world and China may be looking at the United States? Because I can't think of a more critical relationship in terms of how the rest of the world may be affected than U.S.-China relations.
Yeah, well, I mean, I continue to believe what I just said before the break, which is that it was very important for the U.S. president to go there. But the reality is, I would characterize the visit as long on optics and actually pretty short on outcomes. We have different readouts from Washington and Beijing, and there seems to be not a lot of agreement about what actually was decided upon. So, for example, on agriculture, which is something obviously that matters to us here in the state of Montana, there was, according to the Trump administration, a $17 billion deal, and that's beyond soybean purchases. And, of course, soybean purchases is a major part of our agricultural trade with China. It used to be a much more important part before tariffs in the first Trump term, but still important. But the Chinese side only says that they will buy more agricultural goods from the U.S. They have not said nothing about that actual figure. They have said, and this is obviously good for us and for cattle ranchers in Montana, they have said that they're going to start buying more beef from the U.S. They've approved a bunch of slaughterhouses, so that's a positive thing. But again, back to your sort of bigger framing question, I do think that we don't have a lot on outcomes yet, and that does reflect the fact that China felt a little bit like it was in the driving seat on this one. You know, we're dealing with a war, the Iran war. China sort of sat back. They haven't helped on that much at all, and they've sat back and watched the U.S. struggle with that. That's how I would characterize it. And so I think China's keeping their cards close to their chest about exactly what they're going to reciprocate with in terms of more deals with the U.S.
Okay. So we've got a couple of callers.
Yes, we do.
We
have callers waiting. This is Rick. Rick, good morning. You're on with Tiff Roberts. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Roberts. We have a mayor in Arcadia, California, that just pled guilty to spying for the Chinese Communist Party. We had Eric Solwell, a sitting congressman, who had an affair with a communist spy. We had a balloon flying over the whole nation. We have storefronts that are owned by the intelligence services of the Communist Party to covertly spy on us. And we all know this. Why don't they take a more harder stance at this kind of stuff? Eric Solwell never got called on the carpet for dating a Chinese communist spy. In fact, he actually got promoted in whatever jobs he had. Why don't we more aggressively go after the bad actors that come from China and their intelligence services spy on us?
All right, thanks for the call.
Well, I mean, you know, look at who accompanied Trump to China. He brought 30 CEOs, most of our top companies, from Elon Musk to, you know, the head of Boeing, Jay Hertzberg, the list goes on and on. Visa, MasterCard, Blackstone. They were not only on the trip, they were in the room when Xi Jinping hosted Trump. And they actually, the White House readout says that, brags about the fact that some of America's top CEOs were in the room. Well, I think I don't need to tell you that we have a very, very deep economic relationship. There's a lot of big American corporations that have a lot at stake. Trump doesn't seem to have an issue with that. He had filled a plane with CEOs to take him over there. So I think, you know, I think the pushback, there does need to be pushback against espionage, absolutely. And we've seen some of that. But, you know, there's a larger relationship, and I think the Trump administration is responding to that as well.
I also would add, and please, Tiff, weigh in, as always, there's lines of cooperation based on commonalities, and there's also leverage, depending on the circumstances. So when the first tariffs went into place, if you remember, what was China's primary pushback and leverage that they had? It was rare earth minerals. We heard a major outcry from our transportation manufacturers here in the United States when all of a sudden supply started to become in short supply. Right now, we're using a lot of critical munitions, very sophisticated, that require a certain element or several if we're going to reconstitute those munitions, which apparently it's China who supplies that to us. So there's so many things in play. And, Tiff, I want you to comment.
That's a delicate dance.
Yeah, it is a delicate dance. So, Tiff, a couple of comments on that, please.
We've got about a minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, rare earths is a critical one. I think the White House woke up last spring to the reality that China had a bit of a stranglehold over us when it came to rare earths and critical minerals. We started to see, you know, we started to see our auto industry start to be able to not do production because they didn't have access to the rare earths that were necessary for the auto industry. But by the way, are also necessary for our military industry as well. So this is a very big issue, and this is another one I would point to where we don't seem to have gotten much agreement from China. So if you look at the U.S. readout, which I've spent a lot of time poring over these documents, the Trump administration says that China will address U.S. concerns on supply chain shortages related to critical minerals, rare earths.
All right.
China responded yesterday by saying our controls, quote, are legal, and we will address any U.S. concerns that are, quote, reasonable.
With that, we're going to come right back after this quick timeout. So please stay with us.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. A new poll suggests Montana's upcoming U.S. Senate race is wide open, mainly because voters have no idea who the candidates are. According to a new poll by the Montana Free Press Eagleton, more than 40% of registered voters are completely unfamiliar with the leading candidates. That includes Republican Kurt Almy, a former U.S. attorney endorsed by Donald Trump, and independent Seth Bodner, the former University of Montana president. The political fog is even thicker for the Democrats. A majority of voters could not identify any of the four Democratic candidates in the running. Former State Representative Riley Neal has the highest name recognition of the group, yet 60% of the voters still couldn't place her. With no incumbent in the race, candidates are facing a steep uphill battle to introduce themselves to voters, and time is running out before the June 2nd primary election. Well, 2026 Missoula Marathon has officially sold out its main event with a record-breaking 1,700 registered runners. Organizers say this year's field is the largest in the marathon's history, with participants traveling to the Garden City from all 50 states and 11 countries. While the full marathon is at capacity, registration remains open for the Tony Banovich 5K, the Kids Marathon, and the Half Marathon, although that's already 84% full. The race weekend is just 5 weeks away and expected to bring more than 8,000 total participants to the area. Last year, the event generated over $4.2 million in local economic impact. And good news for Western Montana drivers and outdoor enthusiasts, the Montana Department of Transportation announcing that Skalkaho Pass will gear up for the summer season and schedule to officially reopen on Friday after its winter closure. That gate will open up at 10 a.m. Officials say the opening marks the return of the recreational access over the mountain pass, which provides a vital link for recreational users between Hamilton and the southern Bitterroot and the upper reaches of Rock Creek and Granite County. This is the Montana State News Network.
Battery pop quiz. Did you know that most rechargeable devices use lithium-ion batteries? They're in laptops, power banks, and more. They can, however, be a fire risk. So power up your battery smarts with tips from the National Fire Protection Association. Only buy products with a safety certification mark. Charge devices on hard surfaces. Don't use off-brand cords, and always unplug when fully charged. Let's charge into fire safety. Visit fpw.org/battery for more tips.
Meet Ingrid, fiery spirit, caring grandma, proud trucker.
I've logged more than 4 million miles in my truck. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. I was driving outside of Ohio when a gentleman stopped suddenly in front of me. But it takes my 80,000-pound truck 200 yards to stop. I'd given myself extra room, but it's not a chance worth taking.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
are back. This is Talk Back for Thursday, May 21st. The Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. Tiff Roberts talking about China. And we do have folks waiting on the line right now. I believe Harry is up. Harry, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Tiff, talk about what the pundits are saying. I heard someone claim that with Trump's coming in there and being so, jubilant or about, praising Xi so much, that it actually they consider that a sign of weakness, that somehow Trump is coming with hat in hand and trying to praise the leader. And also seems like this administration cares more about business than anything else, and I'm wondering, do you think that there's a possibility that he might sell out Taiwan for business sake?
All right, Harry, thanks for the call.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good question, which is why was the U.S. president so focused on praising Xi Jinping? And I should note it was not reciprocated. Xi Jinping spoke about the importance of U.S.-China relations. He didn't say a lot about Trump, the individual. Trump called him a great leader. He said he's privileged to have him as a friend. The charitable reading would be that he hopes to butter him up and get something in return. My response to that would be that's very naive. China only cares, Xi Jinping doesn't care whether Trump likes him or not. It's only seen in their eyes as whether or not they can use it to China's benefit. So that was going on. I think on Taiwan, this is probably the issue arising out of the summit that has the most potential to affect all of our lives. And the question there is whether President Trump is ready to make some sort of deal that would restrict the flow of arms sales to Taiwan, which has been, set in stone back at least to 1982 with the six assurances between the U.S. and Taiwan. Whether he might do that with Xi Jinping. And so even before the summit, Trump mentioned that he had spoken in a phone call with Xi about arms sales to Taiwan. And that raised a lot of red flags, because typically a U.S. president does not speak with the leader of China about arms sales to Taiwan. And now he's come back and said he described arms sales as a bargaining chip. A little bit unclear whether he's referring to a bargaining chip with China, a bargaining chip with Taiwan. But he mentioned that, and he also mentioned, and this is a big priority of Trump's, trying to get more Taiwanese semiconductor manufacturing into the U.S. So the arms deal with Taiwan has already been held up for months, and there is some concern that, certainly in Taiwan, talking to friends there, there's a lot of concern that it could continue to be held up, at least until Xi Jinping visits the U.S., which is, at this point, scheduled for the fall.
So, Tiff, historically, when you look at U.S. administrations and their policies towards Taiwan, in readings, it seems like there's been some consistency of a comment, no comment type of policy, where we kind of straddle the line here when it comes to Taiwan historically. So how do you see U.S. policy historically, and do we still maintain that in the way that you see right now with the administration?
Yeah, so that's been what they call strategic ambiguity. Right. The U.S. not stating whether it would come to the aid of Taiwan in the event of a conflict with China, but also not saying that they, not committing to China's so-called One China policy, which states clearly that Taiwan is part of China. So, that's been the policy. We've seen some unwinding of that during the Biden administration. Biden repeatedly said the U.S. seemingly off the script remarks kept saying that the U.S. would come to Taiwan's aid if they were threatened by China, then his aides would walk it back and say that the U.S. stance has not changed yet. Going into this visit by Trump to China, there was a lot of fear amongst Taiwanese that there would be a change in the formulation
and this gets into semantics, but it's very important, that the U.S. and Trump would make a statement that they oppose Taiwan independence. Right now, this is getting into the weeds here a little bit, but right now the U.S. says it does not support Taiwan independence. And for China, it really matters that, the U.S. say that they oppose it. China also wants the U.S. to say they support peaceful reunification, quote-unquote, as defined by China. So neither of those things were said during the Trump visit. That was seen as encouraging for Taiwan. But there were these other concerns, particularly related to the arms sales to Taiwan and whether when and how they will happen.
We, we're having a great conversation right now with Tiff Roberts, expert on China, and, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. And we do have we have Jeff waiting with a call, and several other phone lines are open, by the way. If you'd like to get in on this conversation, we'd love to have you. Our numbers are 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And if you're listening for the first time, this is what we do here on TalkBack. And on a regular basis here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout and continue with Tiff Roberts and Bob Seidenschwartz. So stay with us. TalkBackers.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Donors choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
Did you know that every year, public school teachers spend nearly $500 of their own money for student supplies? Let's do the math. That comes out to over $1.2 billion a year. And that's just not right. At Donors Choose, we want students and teachers to have the tools they need for a great education. And now, more than ever, they need your help. Here's what you can do. Go to DonorsChoose.org and choose from teachers' requests that support reading, math, science, history, and more. Once a request is funded, we'll take care of shipping everything directly to the teacher. It's that easy. You'll receive thank you letters and photos from students and teachers and a report of how every dollar was spent. Teachers' needs have never been greater. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.
Donors Choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. And the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio continues with Bob Seidenschwartz in studio. Tiff Roberts, our expert on China, joining us on the phone. And Jeff has been waiting the longest for a question or comment. So, Jeff, go ahead. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, good morning again, Tiff. Good morning, Montana. Excuse me. I had a little frog in my throat. Recently, I guess recently meaning since President Trump took office, I think it's safe to say that we've seen a diminishment of Chinese influence around the world, from Panama, Venezuela, to Cuba, to Iran, and even maybe in the Middle East and other countries. Their influence has waned considerably. And in addition, during the recent kerfuffle in Iran, their military hardware didn't do very well. Their air defense system, folks, have referred to them as the Temu version of air defense. And it's kind of an interest of mine, air defense, because that was my career in the Air Force, doing stuff to support that. But how do you assess China's standing in the world right now? Has it increased, decreased, stayed the same? Are there certain areas that you think President Trump might be concentrating on and trying to, I don't know if pull their chain is the right expression, but diminish their influence around the world and increase ours? Can you talk about that?
Hey, Jeff, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I don't see that. If you look at, for example, Pew Research, the survey company, looking at global attitudes towards China and the U.S., you will actually see a growing lack of trust in Trump's management of foreign policy. And this is a lot of European nations, so, you know, take that however you want. And less and less concern about China's rise. I actually think this has to do with our tariff policy, which ever since it was launched, you know, last April, I think it was April in the spring, we've outraged and upset a lot of countries around the world who do not feel like there's a lot of stability in the U.S. approach to the relationships that they had with the U.S. They feel like there's new instability there. So hard to say on that. I mean, if you look at the surveys, and there's other ones as well, you will see actually declining trust in the U.S. role and growing trust in China's role. That infuriates me. There's nothing that China is doing right that is leading to that slightly growing trust towards China. It continues to be a big mercantilist nation, has supported Putin in Ukraine, at least with components to weapons, if not weapons. It seems to have no desire to help out in Iran. So this is not a country that other countries should be looking up to and you know, tying their wagons to. It has everything, I believe, to do with our own policies, which have made us less popular. I mean, beyond tariffs, I think you point to Panama, that is a success. You look at Trump calling our Canadian neighbors the 51st state, and you look at Canadian attitudes towards the U.S. right now, and they're plummeting. And I don't think it's an own goal in my mind. So I'd have to push back against that notion. And, again, it drives me crazy because there's no reason for the world to be thinking that the U.S. is going to be less reliable than China going forward.
And, Tiff, one of my observations is China's gone into parts of the world, Africa specifically, of which we've not had much of a presence. So often it's who gets there, what they're offering. But I think what I have read and heard as anecdotal, information is that the preference would be to have the presence of the United States, both from a product standpoint, a legal standpoint, reliability,
security standpoint.
So in many ways, it appears that at the moment, we may be kind of diminishing that, but that always has possibilities of turning around. We get back from a break here. I want to bring up something that I know our audience wants to hear more about from you, which is Iran.
You bet. And this hour is flying by. There's so many things we want to talk about. And we have several callers also that want to visit with Tiff Roberts. And we'll try to get to them as well when we come back from the break. Our number is area code 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're talking with Bob Seidenschwartz in the Montana World Affairs Council. Tiff Roberts, our expert on China. And we will continue here in just a moment on the Montana Talks Radio Network. So please stay with us. We want to have you back. Montana weather.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
Meet Ingrid, fiery spirit, caring grandma, proud trucker.
I've logged more than 4 million miles in my truck. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. I was driving outside of Ohio when a gentleman stopped suddenly in front of me. But it takes my 80,000-pound truck 200 yards to stop. I'd given myself extra room, but it's not a chance worth taking.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Nick's over there laughing.
Who's ever picking the music in A+.
I know. I'm a drummer. I bang on things. Anyway, we are back on TalkBack. The Montana World Affairs Council, of course, drumming has nothing to do with that, but Bob Seidenschwartz in the studio, Tiff Roberts, is on the phone. Please, go ahead.
Tiff, I-R-A-N. Here we are. The world awaits a lot of decisions to be made. You're take on China and its relationship with Iran, and how much does that come into play with some of what we just recently saw at the summit with the United States?
Arguably, Iran is the place where the U.S. and China seem to have disagreed the most. Trump, I think, went to Beijing very much hoping to get support from Iran. I'm sorry, support from China to put pressure on their close partner, Iran. And Iran, of course, is major oil supplier to China, and China is their biggest buyer. And that's continued, of course, throughout the war. So if you look at what the Trump administration said came out of the visit, they said, first of all, they mentioned Iran, I think, four times in the official readout from the White House. They said that both leaders, Trump and Xi Jinping, agreed that that the Strait of Hormuz should be reopened. They both agreed that there should be no tolls, which is interesting because not too long ago, Trump was telling us that Iran might be able to charge a toll. things changed quickly. And then they also said that the two sides, Beijing and Washington, agreed that Iran should not become a nuclear power. China did not mention, Xi Jinping in his public statements never said the word Iran once. They mentioned that they had discussions. Their official statement from Beijing said that they had discussions on the situation in the Middle East. And, you know, you step back and I think the problem we're facing there is, from China's perspective, there is the economic and the energy relationship with Iran, which is very important. Equally important from China's perspective is the role that Iran can play as a destabilizer in the region and as a distraction for its biggest rivals and or its biggest rival, which is us, the U.S. I think China watches the course of the Iran war and says, yes, this isn't so great with oil prices going up. It has had some impact, particularly on smaller factories in China's south, those that are producing products that are petroleum-based, plastics, synthetic rubbers, so on. But the bigger picture for them is this is a major distraction that draws the Trump administration's attention away from the Asia-Pacific, and that's a good thing for us in the long term. They also see the lack of support, including, you know, within our own country for the war, and they think that's good, too. Dissension, undermining the White House is a good thing for China.
So, Tiff, do you think that when China's looking at this, this is a really delicate and dangerous game that a lot of different players right now are assessing where their opportunities are, where their risks are. So no sooner than Trump leaving China, Putin shows up. And, of course, Putin and China have long been at various levels of cooperation on certain issues. You mentioned, I think, earlier that, and correct me if I'm wrong, China has supported Russia by what materials in terms of its war with Ukraine. So there's a lot of different, implications to everything that's happening. And we can all agree, nobody wants to see a nuclear armed Iran. But we're also globally seeing the effects of the strait being shut down, economic dislocation, and the possibility of prices going much higher, which will cause even more economic harm in the short to intermediate term. So give us kind of your take on, you know, who's in a position to maybe make a major misstep here.
Well, I'll quote from Xi Jinping on the Putin visit. Xi Jinping said, quote, "The China-Russian relationship has entered a new stage of greater achievements and faster development." The Russian side put out a statement saying, "Attempts by a number of states to single-handedly manage world affairs, impose their interests on the entire world, restrict the sovereign development of opportunities for other countries, in the spirit of the colonial era, have failed." I think that, you know, Xi Jinping has a very close relationship with Putin, much closer than he has with Trump. And, you know, it's a lot of it is based on their mutual animosity for a U.S.-led world order. So that's not going to change. Putin will be shown just as much honors as Trump. He got the same extravagant welcome with the 21-gun salute and the red carpet welcome and the flag and flower-waving children, exactly, that Trump seemed so impressed with and a number of times said no other leader's ever gotten this treatment before. Well, Putin got exactly the same treatment just days later. There's also reports that Xi Jinping may have a trip to North Korea ahead in the coming month or two. So I think, you know, we forget or we ignore the reality that there are other relationships China has that they value just as much that are, you know, with countries that are actively hostile to our own interests. So that's just a reality we need to deal with, and it should be a calculus in any sort of agreements we make with China, for sure.
So, Tiff, I think we have a couple of callers that...
Yes, we do.
Well, okay, so let's wrap up, and then we'll get our callers to give them time when we come back.
You bet.
So, Tiff, whether you can answer this right now or when we return, the economic fallout in terms of Asia and China, what do you see happening, and is China using this to make inroads with, in some cases, allies, and others possibly still sitting on the fence?
Got about 40 seconds.
Short answer is China is actually weathering the fallout of the higher oil prices related to the Iran war better than most countries. I mean, a place like Japan is in absolute crisis. They're so reliant on imports. China has made a dramatic push towards renewable energy. They're looking at nearing, I think, a quarter or a third of all their energy needs within the next 3 years. And, you know, they've been able to get some oil shipments from Iran through the strait because of that close relationship they have with Iran.
We're going to come right back. Okay. Yeah, we're going to come right back. Stay with us. We have Dave and Mikhail both waiting on the phone as TalkBack continues after this timeout.
Ed, movie buff, animal lover, safe driver.
5 years of driving an ambulance teaches you a thing or two. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. When I see a car trying to rush past a turning bus, I get concerned. You see, when big vehicles turn right, they have to swing wide to make the turn. And that's a lesson you don't want to learn the hard way. When trucks and buses turn, let's you and I wait.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
If your community is affected by wildfires, contractors may approach you with incredible promises to help you recover. However, they may be dishonest individuals hoping to take advantage of your situation. Don't be a victim. If you suspect fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. for this Thursday, May 21st. Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. And on the phone, Tiff Roberts, our expert on China. And folks have been waiting on the phone to talk with you, Tiff. Dave, good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hey, good morning. You took away my question about Putin coming to China. So I'll go to the next question, which is, I'm a little embarrassed to ask this question, but it's a hot issue among a lot of people around here. The COVID virus. It seems to be the big debate whether it came from a lab or from an animal. And is that a big issue in China? Is there any discussion of that?
All right, Dave, thanks for the call.
In general, they have tried to squash any sort of discussion about the origins. Infamously, they punished Australia, because Australia, during the height of COVID, called for an international effort to determine the origins. China immediately stopped buying Australian beef and wine and other things they like to sell to China. So China is notoriously thin-skinned when it comes to talking about the origins of COVID. I'm no scientist. Lab leak or from an animal, from what they call a wet market. I'm not quite sure. It is clear that it came out of southwestern China in Hubei province, and I think that's something that we know for sure. China doesn't always like to admit that was the case.
Right. Let's get Mikhail on. Mikhail, good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on with Tiff Roberts and Bob Seidenschwartz.
Hello there. Hi, guys. It's Mikhail. I just wanted to call and ask you guys. I read a great Substack.
Whoop. We lost him. Anyway.
Well, if he calls back.
I know he was going to mention the great Substack called Trade War, published by me, but yes. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah. Let's just assume that's what he was going to say.
Tim, talk a little bit about that until we get our caller back in terms of you do publish a Substack. And where can people sign up, reach you in terms of following your insights on China and U.S. relations?
Really, I go by my middle name, Tiff. As all of you guys know, my full name is Dexter Tiff Roberts. So the best way to find me is to search Dexter Roberts in China, and a lot will come up. My Substack's called Trade War, comes out every weekend, very focused on the U.S.-China economic and business relationship in the Chinese economy. I also do a live video podcast once a week as well. So check it out there.
Okay, thank you.
Dexter something. I can't even remember. Dexter Roberts, Trade War China. You'll find it.
All right, so we have a few minutes left here. And if you're talking to the President of the United States, and you're looking at what you have described with us for this last 50 minutes here, what words of wisdom do you impart?
Well, I think as we started this conversation, I do think it's important for there to be, the ability for those leaders to pick up the phone in the event of a crisis, whether it's in the Taiwan Strait or elsewhere, is important. Chinese officials right down the food chain take their cues from the top leader, Xi Jinping. So the fact that Xi Jinping smiles and shakes the hand of Trump and treats him to a nice banquet means that a lot of officials, including military officials in China, are more likely to pick up the phone going forward if their U.S. counterpart is calling them. So I would say, keep the dialogue going, but be very, very mindful of the fact that there's no there's no stable relationship going forward. Ultimately, we have in China a country that wants to see their power grow and absolutely wants to see U.S. power diminished, and we got to deal with that. And same thing on the corporate side. We can do business there, but be very mindful of the fact that their ultimate goal is to see their Chinese companies take the market of our companies,
right,
and push them out, not just in China and the U.S., but around the world.
So, Tiff, in wrapping things up, first, I do want to say thank you to Peter and Nick and our statewide audience. This is a type of programming that we will continue to bring to Montana, and the expertise that people like you have and the time that you give to us. So I want to say thank you very much. for this conversation today. Peter, any closing thoughts?
No, I just want to say thank you to Tiff, and thank you for our listeners. Some really, really good questions when they call in, especially when Tiff is on regarding China. Tiff, thank you for sharing your expertise with us and with all of our listeners now across the state. We appreciate it very much.
It was a pleasure. I always appreciate the very interesting questions as well, and being on your guys' great radio show. Reaching more Montanans. A real honor to be on.
Thank you. Sounds great. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Friday's fabulous program, sir, what's coming up?
Yeah, we'll get a quick update from Americans for Prosperity, Henry Kriegel, for the first 10 minutes or so tomorrow, and then for the remaining half hour, we'll have Susan Campbell-Renaud in studio. She'll be talking about Memorial Day events across the state. And then from 9 to 10, we will have City Talk.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And again, thanks to all of you for calling in this morning. We appreciate it. You made the show really excellent. And then thanks to Tiff Robertson, Bob Seidenschwartz as well. And Sam Forstag, who was with us in the 8 o'clock hour as well. You guys get out there and make it a great day. And we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early, at 8 o'clock for the Friday edition of Talk Back. We will talk to you then.